Well, thank you for hanging in with me this evening, or early this morning, depending on where you are. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is the amazing, the wonderful, the one and only best in talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, we've been talking about Bigfoot. Now, for those of you that just listened to the interview with Brian Sykes, his insistence, if you want some of the information, you've got to buy the book. I'll tell you what, because I love you people, I'm going to give you some of the information free of charge. How are we doing that? We're going to put up a link on coasttocoastam.com. There's an article that was posted about his work, the DNA test results from the Russian ape woman, Zana. Was she truly a Yeti? Well, you'll be able to find that information out when you go check out coasttocoastam.com. We'll give you the word directly from his mouth, his findings, his understandings, and so on, so you can find out a little bit more about the Russian ape woman we spoke about during the last hour of the show. For the next 2 hours, Andrew Colvin will be joining me. And Andrew has edited and is a part of a book called Gray Barker's Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict, and he's the co-author of Praise for the Hairy Man, The Secret Life of Bigfoot. So we're going to be discussing these books throughout the evening. I want to welcome to the show Andrew Colvin. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Andrew, you've got an interesting story yourself, so let's start off by getting to know a little bit about you and what happened to you in the 1960s in West Virginia.
Well, I, the area I grew up in was pretty remote. There, you could walk out the back door and probably walk 100 miles without seeing anybody if you
okay.
really wanted to. And so I really did feel like I was a forest child. That was really where I spent all of my time in those days. There was no internet, cell phones and stuff, so I was out there all the time, and that's really kind of a bygone age, but in doing so and going out with some of the older folks, like my grandfather, who was born before there were telephones and cars, and he was about half Native American. I'm somewhere between a quarter and a half. And so I was just raised with these ideas that it was all about nature, and strange things were always happening, but it was considered to be normal. So when I finally made it to the civilized world, I really found that I had some experiences that no one else had. So I've just been trying to put that material out, which I've done, and moving on to some other topics like Bigfoot. So I did have experiences with both Mothman and Bigfoot. My Mothman experiences were pretty brief, though, just a couple times. And I never really knew what it was about and didn't put too much stock into it because, again, it was all considered to be somewhat normal. The Bigfoot stuff started when I was really young, before Bigfoot was known as Bigfoot. I was having...
Well, let me take you back for a second. I just find it interesting, and I know as somebody who goes out and investigates firsthand some of the claims of paranormal, from ghosts to Bigfoot to UFOs, it's funny how unaffected you are. You're like, yeah, I saw Mothman a couple of times, and it's so matter-of-fact to you, it's no more than, well, yeah, I passed a McDonald's on the way into work this morning. But for those of us that have not had an experience with the entity known as Mothman, can you take us back to that for a few moments and kind of put us in the mindset? How old were you when you had this entity encounter?
7.
7 years old. And you remember, do you remember seeing it? Do you remember a sense or any kind of emotional reaction to what you were seeing?
I had precursor knowledge that it was coming, but it was based on the fact that people were talking about people had seen it. So I started pondering this, and I was really excited by it. I decided it's the greatest thing ever, and I wanted to see this thing, and I did. But it was not greeted with any. My dad was really shut it down. And so and everybody else would have shut it down too. So I just played it off, and then it happened again. 6 years later, I didn't see him flying this time, but he was basically coming out of a tree. So that started me thinking that it might not, it may not have been Mothman that I saw the second time. Maybe I saw Bigfoot or something that can coalesce into either of being, because people were seeing various other things at the same place, like the Virgin Mary or UFOs or these orbs, intelligent orbs, strange black forms, and cougar-like entities. You know, cougars, black cougars, there aren't supposed to be any there, but people were seeing a lot of those. So the whole neighborhood, you know, was seeing stuff. But it still was a risk to say anything.
Was it a frightening encounter? I mean, you see something like this. This sounds like something from nightmares for the rest of us.
Yeah. Well, like, I was terrified, and I ran all the way home, which was at least a mile or two, a mile and a half. Then, unbeknownst to me, the guy who lived there saw it. Well, no, it grabbed him on the shoulder. So it was flying this time, and it flew above him and grabbed him with its talons. But he said it was basically invisible. You know, somewhat translucent. He didn't tell anybody. So he kind of, you know, remained a popular kid. But nowadays he admits it, and he's gone on record. So there's a lot of people like that who at the time didn't want to say anything, but now will. But this Bigfoot stuff was very ethereal. Always when I'm like relaxing alone in the house, going to sleep or something, and then I would have these dreams that Bigfoot was talking to me through the window. Many dreams where I used to sleepwalk quite a bit, and people would find me outside. Well, I remember, you know, some of these dreams that I have may be actually what I was doing when I was sleepwalking. So I would go out there on the hill above our house, and there would be glowing Bigfoots holding spheres, having a solemn, you know, ritualistic activity. It didn't seem to be, it was like a tape of a Masonic meeting. It had a very distant feel to it. It's very hard to describe it. So as the years progressed, as I mentioned in the book, we always slept camped out with just one roll, one blanket. That was it. Old school. And it wasn't until I started using tents. Tents became popular in the 70s. And then suddenly, Bigfoot would come or something. I was assaulted every time I did it. And I've come to realize that in the Native American tradition, that's a trigger, because you're calling in the spirits. It's an old shamanic trick to put up a tent and start a fire, and then the seer or shaman of the tribe would go in there and literally read the plants, animals, look into the future for the next hunting season, and get information from the natural environment that you couldn't get any other way, like a psychic connection to nature itself. I think maybe, certainly the statistics show that if you have some Native American blood, some Celtic blood, which I do, Italians have a little of that, gypsies, you're more likely to have certain kinds of experiences in this area. So it kind of makes sense that I might be heading in that direction. Yeah, I've been out here many times in Seattle, seen things, many UFOs, different Bigfoot type things. The people I'm with have seen them. It's continuing up to even just last month. The guy that who's on my Bigfoot team, who I've been going out with for 20 years, has really been honing in on these weird, they're like drones or something. They're glowing drones. They can change shape, and they're floating around the Cascades all over the place. They've been there for a long time, and it's very easy to see them, and you can photograph them, and the thing's changing shape, and it's amazing. You put this, it's almost like no one believes it anymore because photos can be so easily manipulated.
Right.
That they don't believe your photo. So what do you do?
Andrew, we need to take a quick break. We'll continue to talk about your experiences, about your interest and what drew you to this, and then we'll talk also about Gray Barker's re-release of the book, Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. My guest for the remainder of the evening, Andrew Colvin. Andrew, in the press release that was sent to me regarding your work and background, when you had this encounter with Mothman, it says following those encounters, you found that you had the ability to draw, sing, and had a photographic memory. Do you think that that ties into the experiences with it, or was it because you were this adept and this skilled? Do you believe that's what allowed you to see this being to begin with?
Oh, well, you know, as John Keel was always saying, it's just genetic, really. And he also made the observation that as the population gets larger, you have more and more people like that out there. And they're all on the Internet, of course, creating a firestorm of paranormal memes out there. What was your question?
According to the press release, after your encounters with the Mothman, you suddenly had these abilities to draw, sing, photographic memory. Is this a chicken before the egg kind of scenario? Do you believe that it was you had some genetic ability to do this, and that seeing him kicked it into gear, or do you think because you were already predisposed to us, that's what allowed you to see these beings?
Yeah, it's probably both. Yeah. It's hard to say, isn't it? But probably both.
Well, and I think it's important for people to know about you as well. You were recognized as a prodigy, right? You were actually offered a national merit scholarship to Harvard University. Is this right?
Everyone knew but me. My mom.
Okay.
My mom really thought it was bad for me to feel superior in any way like that, and so I wasn't even told my test scores. But I just recently found out my sister had told everybody. So all through school, I had a lot of people competing ferociously against me, and I had no understanding why. And I guess it probably helped me in the long run, but, you know, kind of going up against tough competition all the time. It did. I think when you experience reality sort of becoming plastic, you know, that's it. All the other things that people are saying, especially the materialist types, you know, you just don't believe it. And you sort of automatically become a rebel or a, you know, radical. I've been called a radical. I've been called everything. But it's just simple, everyday observation and logic from what I can see. There's so much out there just sort of confusing everybody that the simple truth just seems so far out to them, you know. It's very simple stuff. It's your own personal journey.
Is it unnerving for you to see these type of creatures when other people are not seeing them? I mean, does it make you feel like you're questioning your own sanity at times?
Well, I certainly went through that. But I've had enough people that were with me now just to see it too, that I'm pretty convinced it's real. And my history with Buddhism has helped me quite a bit. I mentioned one of my sightings in the book that took place with my Buddhist mentor. But Buddhism sort of helps smooth the way, so to speak. You just go with the flow, and you know it's within that. Their belief system that you have Bigfoots. In fact, my Buddhist mentor, who was the first licensed Buddhist priest in Washington, who ministered at the state prisons, he was really the first Bigfoot believer that I ever ran across. And he was totally a very well-educated man. He'd been all over the world, he was a bit of a traveling hippie, and he ended up in jail in the Eastern Bloc. and was spending horrible time in jail there, which turned him to Buddhism. And somehow he was able to escape through Afghanistan, come back to the States, and become a real, like, regular Tibetan-style priest who totally followed all of the strict guidelines and so forth. So it just really surprised me. And so I started thinking more deeply about my own, you know, experiences as a kid. What was all that about? What were these glowing spheres? What's the message Bigfoot's trying to get across? And it seems to be different than what Mothman is up to. Mothman is working on a grander scale. He gets to fly around and sort of has an overarching view of that we need to save the world in a certain way, so to speak. And Bigfoot sort of just minds his own business and lopes through the forest. And so they're very different characters, but I think they're related somehow, because they certainly seem to show up a lot in the same places, along with UFOs and psychic synchronicities and things. There's so much stuff in this book. You know, I hadn't really looked at it in a while, because we're cranking out books at a massive pace here. But I went back and looked, and there's so many cool stories in here. Barker
and okay, right, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Gray Barker's Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict. This was originally released back in the early 1980s, 1983. Why re-release it now? What information do you feel is important to come back out at this point?
Well, for one thing, just that Barker was clued into that stuff so early. You know, the shooting aspect and the totally weird... I made some notes on just some of the weirder Bigfoot tales in the book. Just the fact that he was able to pull all that together back then, when it was so hard to communicate in a way, there wasn't that much info out there. There really wasn't too much acceptance of any of this genre mixing, you know, where you're mixing Bigfoot and UFOs. Oh my God, everybody was, they just poo-pooed it right off the bat, I think. And very few people read the book or saw it, but he was really way ahead of his time.
We've got about a minute and a half in this section. Can you tell me real quickly, who was Gray Barker? Where did his interest in this all come from?
Oh, well, gee, he grew up in West Virginia near me, and probably had a similar, you know, growing up in the woods and enjoying all that. But he studied literature and was a teacher, English teacher, and just sort of got into the subject. He just really loved UFOs, and he did some really great reporting in the 50s. He was probably the best. His book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, was, John Keel said, was the best UFO book of the 50s. It's very readable, and he was objective and a great reporter. Just his column was the most widely read UFO column or weird science column in the country.
Was it handled? And now I know the art on the book makes it look very Weekly World News, yeah. You know, especially with what you've got going. But he took this very seriously?
Well, he did at first. You know, in the 50s, he's like dead on, like the best. He's got the best reports, the most detail. As time wore on, he got a little looser with it. I think he just saw the fractious nature of the field, you know, and it just sort of, like it does everyone, you go through this period where it's just like, oh my God, what is this? But I think he was just massively, or I keep using that word, he was just very productive. He put out hundreds of titles, and we're up
well, to... We need to take a break. Our guest is Andrew Colvin, the editor of the new release of Gray Barker's Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict. He said he's got some of his favorite stories pulled aside. We'll talk about those stories and more right here on Coast to Coast AM. If this is the type of program that you love to hear, strange, fringe news from around the world, well, then you've come to the right place. We are the best in overnight talk radio, Coast to Coast AM. You can hear us 7 days a week. And if you miss the show and want to know how to go back and find the archives, it's very simple. Visit coasttocoastam.com and become a Coast Insider. For 15 cents a day, that's a one-year subscription. 15 cents a day gets you access to over 5 years of past shows. That's thousands of episodes of Coast to Coast AM. All the range of topics you could possibly want are right there, housed in one location for you to scan through and find shows and topics that you would love to listen to. So go check that out, coasttocoastam.com, keyword insider, and find out more information about how you can join the exclusive club known as the Coast to Coast Insiders. Live chats and more information. And while you're there, check out George's other programs. Did you know that he has a TV series? And for just 99 cents for the first month, you could check out beyondbelief.com, which is a great extension of Coast to Coast AM. It gives you an opportunity to see more of what you hear on Coast to Coast AM. And I know, if you're like me, you're sitting around bored and lonely and listening to the radio, watching the shows, and wishing you had somebody to share it with. Well, George is taking care of that as well. ParanormalDate.com is a new program he's been involved with here for the last year, and it's approaching 40,000 members. 40,000 members just like you that are interested in the topics we cover on this show. So if you'd like to find your next love interest, your best friend, then check out ParanormalDate.com and find out what so many other people around the world have found, that they could meet their match, that have the same interests, same likes, and all that information. Everything I just mentioned to you is all at CoastToCoastAM.com. CoastToCoastAM.com will give you the information on becoming an insider. You can find Beyond Belief with George Norrie there, and you can find ways to sign up to ParanormalDate.com. So keep in the know like everybody else, and check out CoastToCoastAM.com for more information on the best in overnight talk radio. When we return, Andrew Colvin, our guest, will talk about Gray Barker's re-release of the 1983 classic Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Andrew Colvin is my guest this evening for the remainder of the show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Bigfoot Shootout, Terrifying Tales of Interspecies Conflict, originally released back in 1983, was way ahead of its time, and it features Barker's musings of the unusual intersection of Bigfoot, UFOs, and firearms, as well as special reports submitted to him as at his Saucerian headquarters in Rifle, West Virginia. And they've re-released the book. Andrew Colvin, the editor, is with us this evening. And you said you've picked some of your favorite stories, some of the weirdest encounters from the book to share with us this evening. Is that right?
Do you want me to list them and go through?
Yeah, please. Okay. Let's start off and start giving us some of the background and the history on these stories.
Okay, well, these there's a series of Barker books like this, which are all from his newsletters, and there's a lot of them, and I've only scratched the surface, but they bounce around. You know, they have different reporters reporting in and so forth, so they're kind of cool that way. So some of the things he gets into is the Fred Beck case, where what's his book called? I Shot the Ape Man of Mount St. Helens, or... Yes, that's the title. Anyway, it's that whole text, or an edited version of that text, where Beck talks about how Bigfoots attacked the cabin that he and some other miners were staying in. And then he actually shot a Bigfoot and watched it fall into Ape Canyon. And another fellow shot a Bigfoot. But you know, they never recovered the bodies or anything, and there was a really vast search everywhere for the and it was a real phenomenon in the area for quite a while. He later became a telepath, a Bigfoot contactee, who even had a Bigfoot girlfriend, and he originally was like a kind of a right winger, you know, and he ended up being this far out. He was really new age in his elder years. And there's an interview between him and Roger Patterson, who shot the Patterson Bigfoot film, in the appendix, which is really good. There's the Bigfoot possession case from Pennsylvania, 1973, where a saucer landed, and then the Bigfoot started showing up, and the boys shot at the Bigfoot, and then one of them became possessed by Bigfoot.
Now, when they saw the saucer, are they saying that, is it their belief that Bigfoot was the inhabitant of the saucer that they saw?
Yes. because, well, that's the implication, you know. But they didn't see it coming out of the saucer in this case. But there are other cases where people did see Bigfoot coming out of the saucer. The saucer left a glow that the police could see when they arrived. And a famous psychiatrist, Eric Schwartz, showed up to interview and did a really nice write-up of this, which is in his UFO Dynamics book, which we hope to be reprinting soon. The only psychiatrist, real psychiatrist, to study a lot of these cases.
So this one of the boys became what they believe was possessed by a Bigfoot.
Yes, he was groaning, fell to the ground, was acting like a monster, and Schwartz followed him for quite a while after that. And there were all kinds of psychic and synchronistic things happening in his life later. There's the Oceana, West Virginia, 1978 police shootout with Bigfoot. There's the 1912 Gallup.
Well, wait. Well, let's go back to the police shootout. You can't just skim over that again. How did this story unfold?
You know, it's funny because in the book, Barker will just give you like two or three sentences for these. So I can't give you a lot more on it. I could, you know, I could find the guy's name or something, but that's the basic idea. Police have shot at Bigfoot. And there's more, I'm sure there's more cases. There's the 1912 Gallipolis, Ohio, which is right across from the river from Point Pleasant, where Mothman was seen so much, had a Bigfoot with a dark cloud that was following it. And it disappeared in front of the witnesses. There was a Canadian lady who shot, a Bigfoot scared her girl out in her yard, so she shot Bigfoot. And it ran off, hit it, and there was blood. You know, in some cases there's no blood, in some cases there is. There's an amazing case of Albert Ostman, 1924, who was kidnapped by a Bigfoot tribe in British Columbia, and he was able to escape by giving the head Bigfoot snuff, and that messed him up so much that chaos ensued, and he was able to escape. In the Dalles, Oregon area, there were some teenagers who shot a Bigfoot full-on with a 12-gauge, like almost point-blank, and no blood left. The Bigfoot scream and run away, but they don't appear to be hurt. And the question I ask is, why do they even react? If it's not going to really hurt them, and if they're like interdimensional, why would they even scream? Is that some sort of theater for us, you know?
Or is it alerting other Sasquatch Bigfoot to not come in closer because whoever's here is violent in nature?
Yeah.
You're laughing through all of this. You began with a very, it seems like a systematic belief in this and that you've had your own encounters, but as you're reading each one of these different tales, it almost sounds like you don't believe much of these tales recounted.
No, it's not that I don't believe them. It's that I really think it's fun to have those experiences. And I'm just overjoyed that somebody, you know, I don't know. I shouldn't.
It's always convenient, though, right? That they shot at him. There was no blood, which means there's nothing for us to look at or test. There's no proof that this actually occurred in any of these cases.
Well, most of these are old cases. These days, you know.
Oh, understandable. But, you know, supposedly the guy shot him at Mount Helens or Mount St. Helens. This happened that. There's never a body that can be recovered. There's never hair or chunks of flesh or anything that's left behind. They get shot and scream and run away and leave no trail. What do you think it is that we're dealing with? Are these interdimensional beings, energetic beings taking this form, ghosts? What do you think it is?
I think they're interdimensional, but I believe the story where it also leaves blood. You know, it doesn't always leave blood. So that's, to me, is a really important thing. So I think they can become physical. That's the great mystery. How do they really become physical, and then how do they really leave? It's a real mind twister. There was the Salem, Ohio Bigfoot case where Bigfoot had a cougar pet, a pet cougar that cruised around with him. But, you know, a lot of people, these were multiple witnesses, a lot of them. So it's, I don't.
Well, it would only make sense that if this thing was living amongst the woods, I'm sure that it would, you know, come to learn to coincide with the other beings or other creatures that lived in the woods, right?
Yeah. There's the Vader Washington Bigfoot case where Bigfoot was going through someone's lingerie drawer. There's Rochdale, Indiana Bigfoot, which appeared after a Bigfoot explode, or I'm sorry, a UFO exploded. Many witnesses. The Sykesville, Maryland case where Bigfoot was dropped from a UFO. In the Pennsylvania case, at around the same time, there was a Bigfoot that literally walked down the ramp from a UFO. Multiple witnesses, I think, on that one. And then it became invisible.
So how many encounters have you had with these Bigfoot species?
I've had at least three, at least with this invisible thing, which, so I can't really say I know it's Bigfoot, but...
Well, do you communicate with it at all?
No. Well, okay. I think I would now. But in the past, I was nervous. I mean, because stuff goes on that's just really is frightening, like screams and things that are way beyond. You know, because I know the mountains. I know the Appalachians, and I know when it's not supposed to be doing that. And some of these things are just... I mean, I've been crouched in my tent with a gun, with a cacophony of screaming things screaming at me, with other people there, and you can't shoot them. It's pointless. So the gun, you know, some people like Kiwoni Lapsaritis will say, well, if you had the gun, therefore Sasquatch, you know, was getting worked up, but the Sasquatch should know that I'm not going to shoot it. I don't have the gun to shoot Sasquatch. And if the Sasquatch is really telepathic, then it should know that. And nowadays, I don't think it's a problem to have a gun.
What do you make of claims like Kiwoni? We had Kiwoni on Darkness Radio a couple weeks back. And, you know, parts of the story are fascinating, and then the parts of he's had sex with female Sasquatch.
He finally admitted it?
That's out there, and he's talked about other strange aspects of this case, and they're so far fetched sounding that, you know, it almost diminishes the experience. And a lot of people look at this man as an authority, and that these experiences happen. And then, and again, I'm not here to judge, but I'm just, you know, how do you look at what's feasible and what's outside the realm of possibility?
I have to say that at least some of what Kiwoni is saying is true. He was actually on my Bigfoot team. We were on the same team for a while. And now, and the third guy, we call it the trilingual Bigfoot team. The third guy is Billy Bob, who's half Native and half Basque Spanish. And he, like, knows the woods of this area so well, both of them. But they were both used dowsing, which you got to keep in mind. The Basque god is a Druid god, which is a Bigfoot-like god called Gentiliac. So for him, this is a whole cultural thing, and both of those guys doused in where they thought Bigfoot was to me, without knowing what the other said, and they both said the same Lake 22. In Washington. How did they know that? And that was the place where I thought it was. And were they reading my mind? How did these two guys do that? And I can tell you that Kiwoni definitely has stuff happening around him. Definitely. I think, you know, whether or not there's secondary things going on that he's adding or not, I don't know. But there were definitely people around him that were testifying that they had been healed by the Sasquatch, that he had put them in contact with. I spoke to them personally, interviewed them on tape. I did a three-hour documentary on Kiwoni, which was only out for a short time. But it's a great, great. He talks about the Bigfoot girlfriend, There's another guy in here that had the Bigfoot girlfriend. I think I mentioned Fred Beck. So, and I'm glad he's that Kuoni's up saying it. You know, go ahead and you know, get it out there. I think it's possible. Whether you know, who can judge how far someone's mind can take them? Because there's definitely a link to the recipient here, and there can be tweakings, individual tweakings. But I'm telling you that in groups, I have definitely experienced a lot of these things. So I know that it's real to that extent. I don't know if 1,000 people would all see it if they were all there. But,
you know, but do you think that it does? I mean, there's somebody who honestly believes in Bigfoot and believes that these experiences occur. When you start hearing some of these more fantastical tales, do you think that harms the field and the belief system that Bigfoot exists?
Well, I think anyone making up stories is harming, you know, if it's UFO, Bigfoot, or conspiracy.
Sure.
We do all
that. But I'm just saying when you hear, because again, as I said when we had Kuoni on our show, I believe that he believes everything he's telling me.
Absolutely. I believe he believes it too.
I just have a hard time believing that what he's telling me is legitimate. You know, you tell me you're out hunting and you see them and maybe they come up and commune or will take food from you. I can buy into that stuff and then to be entering into sexual relations and that they're psychically communicating and this and that. It just starts to get to that realm of so sci-fi sounding, which again is maybe that's what's so hard about this because it is so sci-fi sounding. It's going to sound crazy, but maybe that doesn't, you know, take away the legitimacy of the experiences.
Another thing that Kuoni did was he started talking about Seward Park in Seattle, or that there's big, you know, could be a Bigfoot closer to downtown. And I had gotten some information about Seward Park from my Buddhist mentor years before that. So then I'm like, what's going on there? Well, then suddenly someone else I know who doesn't know these guys, other guys, says he's seen Mothman twice in Seward Park. So why, there you have Mothman and Bigfoot again in the same spot. It's very strange. There was one cool Wisconsin sighting in here that I forgot to mention.
Please.
Where Bigfoot was literally riding the front of the flying saucer as it flew. I have to laugh because it's just a funny image. I'm not.
Right,
I'm
yeah.
Not
no, I'm with you.
There's a few more. There's in Caracas, Venezuela, a Bigfoot. These are mini Bigfoots. Now, Barker introduced the idea of the mini Bigfoot.
Okay.
They're like 4 feet tall. They're the like the little people of the Cherokee.
So are they little people with still big feet?
I don't know if they have big feet, but they're furry. But they might glow green, strange green or something. These little guys have paralyzing rays that they shot at people.
Sure.
They could break a gun in half. In the Kelly, Kentucky case, the bullets bounced off of them, and they were able to float through the air.
Of course.
One thing that I mentioned about the saucer landing and the guy shooting at the Bigfoot was that it may have been another case, but the Bigfoots were mimicking the shape of the farm animals. So they knew that their horse was locked up in the barn. But there appeared in a Bigfoot literally, you know, had turned itself into a horse. And a lot of people saw that. That's a really far out one.
They're all pretty far out. And we'll open up phone lines when we return at the top of the hour. If you have questions for our guest about some of these claims, your own thoughts. Do you guys think that when you hear stories like this, does it hurt the credibility of the field of cryptozoology? Or do you think that it improves it because it gets more people intrigued, whether they're laughing or shaking their head. It's getting them involved. I'm curious what everybody out there has to think. So we'll open up phone lines. We'd love you to be a part of the show with us. Andrew Colvin will stick with us as we return. Stay tuned. There's so much more in the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.